Hello and welcome to Exiled Eagles. Much like Roy Hodgson's tactics, we don't change much. My name's Rob Seltzer, and joining me today we have in sunny Sydney, Dale Quarty. How are you, Dale?
Good, mate. Just checking out the window. Cloudy here.
Mate, sunny as fuck here, so tough shit. Live from the Ute in the most expensive suburb of Queensland, our resident robber, Mark Kiwerner. So you're on your stakeout, Mark. Which house are you going into later on today?
Mate, I'm currently scoping out. I've got my ladder on the roof racks. The owner's just gone out. So as soon as you wrap this pot up, I'm going to get busy.
Beautiful. Good stuff, mate. But anything good for me, I'll have it. And still locked down, Ned Rock. How are you, Ned?
Not too bad. Obviously can't go out and steal stuff from people more than a 5K radius away. So I'm going to have to rely on Mark's kleptomania as well. But yeah, other than that, pretty good.
Good stuff. Right, so let's just get right into it. We've got to an international break. We're four games into the new season. 6 points from those four games, probably more than some people would have hoped. But, you know, after Chelsea, there's been a bit of a downer. So let's start with you, Dale. Are you happy with the start? And what I mean by happy with the start, are you happy with how we're playing? The points are obviously good. But are you happy with everything involved in Palace at the moment in those first four games?
Look, points-wise, six is probably a bit of a bonus. We probably would have targeted four. So a win against Southampton and maybe a draw of Everton. This has been how they started. Obviously, we were very unlucky. The Man United win, whilst we all celebrate it and we cock a hoop, that might turn out to be a pretty poor win, only winning 3-1 up there. So, in all seriousness, it has been a start that we probably all expected. The tactics haven't changed, as you've already alluded to. The system hasn't really changed in terms of personnel. It's been a whoever's fit basically plays at the back. We are waiting to see Batshuayi come in for Ayew. And not that I think it's going to happen, but we're waiting to see Eze get into a number 10 role. And just waiting to see how on earth Roy can crowbar four defensive midfielders into the next game.
Yeah. Very well said. Very well said. The last little bit there, Dale. All right, Mark, just peel your eyes away from the alarm that you're trying to work out at the moment. How are you feeling after the first four?
Yeah, pretty good. 6 points from the first four is not bad tracking. So we're on course for 57 points this season. So that's all right. Obviously, yeah, the Chelsea game was a bit of a dip on it. Kicked us all in the balls and brought us screaming back to reality. A couple of pens, bits off one of them, a few mistakes. So I don't know. Everyone was up in arms. Maybe a bit of a false flag for where we were at. But look, more than happy to turn over Man U 3-1. That was awesome. And a couple of signings on the right end of the scale, age wise, which is what we're all wanting and after. And some promising signs. Eze looking good and comfortable on the ball. Doesn't look overawed by this whole Premier League malarkey. So I think he will only get better. And yeah, some good signs. It's a bit of the window to come with other teams in the EFL that we can still trade with for five more days, I think. Who, let's face it, is probably the only mob we're ever going to deal with anyway. I couldn't see us going abroad, so... Yeah, not too bad, mate. I'm not kicking stones just yet.
We've got until next Friday, mate. I think it's the 16th that shuts off.
Yeah, there you go.
The 15th. All right then, Ned. I know that we're going to come to verbal blows at some point today. So we might as well start it off now. How are you feeling after the start?
I mean, I'm just sort of listening along and going... We've played four games. We've played two of last season's top four. We've played an Everton side who are looking the goods to finish very high in a European spot this year. And Southampton, who since playing us have gone on to have some pretty impressive results. And of those four games, we picked up 6 points. So I don't think we can really have too many complaints there. I think in terms of what we're getting there was good. I think obviously the Chelsea second half was not what we want to see. I think the first half was a disciplined performance, which was what we were sort of expecting to see and hoping to see against Chelsea. You know, came in 0-0, they hadn't had a whole heap of chances. Second half was an absolute shit show. But if you're looking at the season so far, you're going four games, one half's been an absolute shit show. The other three and a half games, well, you know, we've achieved what we want to achieve in most of them. Very unfortunate against Everton. Good win against United, as Dale said. You know, that doesn't look quite as impressive based on their other games. But on the flip side, I would say a win against Southampton does look a bit more impressive based on their other games. So, you know, 6 points from four games. Can't complain with that, given the teams we've played. And, hopefully we can keep that going.
Yeah, no, I won't disagree with that yet. If you look at from the points haul, look, we can't complain. 6 points from those four games. If you look at the start of the season, I don't think, as Dale said, I don't think anyone would have dreamed of six. We probably targeted Southampton. We always lose at home to Southampton anyway, but a good win. But then I'll caveat that by saying, were we that good? I mean, okay, we had the Wilf disallowed second goal for offside. We also have two unbelievable Guaita saves in there too. That, you know, swings and roundabouts. United, Sells. We were good.
Sells. You suddenly sound like you played against Bournemouth at the restart, mate. Hey?
Mate, looking back at that, but the thing that makes me nervous, is we've changed system but haven't changed tactic. So, I mean, we've got players now that can go out and attack, but we don't seem to want to try and do that at all. And we can't get right into it now, Nick, because it will be at least 6 hours. But, I mean, I'm blue in the face, and Twitter, which is obviously the world's only place for news of any kind that's true, all agree with me that we played differently against Chelsea than anyone else, maybe because we thought they were better than them. We didn't press them high. We didn't try and attack. It just makes me nervous. It just makes me nervous that that's going to be the tactic for the rest of the year. And we're going to sit through another load of this dross where we'll pick up a result here or there.
If I can I'll just jump in with that Chelsea one. The reason we didn't press Chelsea as high is because our players have triggers as to when they press. Chelsea played in a way that didn't activate those triggers, therefore our players didn't press. United gave us the ball. They literally handed us the ball on a plate. We didn't have to press. They stuffed up so much at the back that the players didn't have an option but to press. It was like the ball was literally there to be taken. They were that's why we were pressing more in that game. The actual tactics and everything haven't changed. The tactics against Chelsea were to sit there, frustrate them, wait until they took some extra risks, and then we could hit them on the counter-attack. Unfortunately, which first half, absolutely fine. Second half, they put in a ball that was really not that threatening. Individual error, we'll talk about that later. And all of a sudden, it's 1-0. Okay, you're asking for us to attack. We started attacking more. What happened? They went bang, bang, bang. Three goals, 4-0 straight away. If we attack teams, we end up looking like Manchester United do at the moment. They just attack for the sake of attacking and cop three against us. They cop six against Spurs. They cop two, and it should have been about seven against Brighton. Like, that's what a team that just attacks for the sake of attacking
looks like. I'm not asking us to attack for the sake of attacking. I'm not asking us to go toe-to-toe with your Chelsea's, your Everton's, your Liverpool's. But what I am asking is to show some intent. If you watch that game, there were times, multiple occasions, where both teams, us with the ball and then Chelsea certainly, they were literally walking about passing the ball to each other. Literally walking about. And, I mean, and they were doing that 10 yards in our half.
Rob, what do you think happens if you go sprinting, if you're a defender and you go sprinting at Kai Havertz or you go sprinting at Timo Werner, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to skip straight past you and walk straight in.
It's not black and white. I understand it's not. I'm not talking about black and white. I'm just saying there are times where we did nothing. We did absolutely nothing, and we were told to do nothing. So it just makes me nervous that that's what we're going to see for the rest of the year. We've got Brighton in a couple of weeks. Now, I'm not saying we should attack, but we've got to show something more. We can't just do that to Brighton. We can't do that against Sheffield United, against Burnley, which we've done for the past 2 years. I just want to see us take it on to the next level a little bit. That's just why I'm nervous, and that's why I'm very much in the Roy out camp. First one of the season, Roy out. All right, so we're moving on. The transfer window...
Don't move on, Rob. I was quite happy with that. Keep going.
The transfer window has shut for... I think it's all the top leagues internationally. So we can't sign anyone from any of the top leagues, but we can sign people from... in the Football League. So how are we feeling? Do we think it's a good window? Do we think it's a bad window? Is there other business you want us to do? Is there any other business we think we should have done? Let's start with you, Ned. How what's your feeling towards the window this summer?
I think if you look at the window, like you've sort of been reading a fair bit on social media, and obviously we have wonderfully whingy fans. Rob represents most of them on this pod. But just reading so much, and it's like, oh, it's a terrible transfer window. I don't understand how people could possibly think what we've just had is a terrible transfer window. We wanted a striker. Yes, we didn't get one permanently, but we got in Batshuayi. We wanted some younger players. We signed two of the best young players in the championship last year. We didn't want Wilf to go. He didn't. So you're sitting there at the end of the transfer window going, well, you've kept your best player. You signed a player that can play up front and has done well for us in the past. We've got two young players that have come in to add to the squad depth without losing anyone. And also, when I say add to squad depth, you're looking at someone like an Ezzy who has clearly come in and shown that he's more than good enough to start straight away. Ferguson, obviously, we're still waiting on, but, you know, obviously looks like a positive signing. Still possibilities to sign up... Klein, which is looking quite possible, who's obviously been with this. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's a pretty good window. Would it have been nice to get one or two, maybe? We're Crystal Palace, we're not Chelsea. We can't just sit there and go, oh, our goalkeeper's had two bad games to start the season. Here's another 50 million. Let's go buy someone else. Like, we don't have that luxury. So to keep our best players and to bring in players to add to the depth, I think it's been great. I think you can criticise the style and all that sort of thing, when our squad is fit, they tend to get results. So the issue is when we have a whole bunch of games in a row, we don't have that depth. Now that we've got those players, you would argue that if players do get injured, we do have a little bit more depth, so that hopefully when those games do start rolling around a bit thicker and a bit faster, that if those injuries do occur, we're not relying on players that aren't good enough or don't understand what's going on. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, pretty good window.
You agree with that, Dale?
No.
In essence, yes. In essence, I do. I completely agree. In the crux of the matter is yes. The elephant in the room is Saeed Benrahma. We've been linked with him for a little while. We don't know what's going on there. We've heard on the grapevine that we're not interested at the moment, blah, 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 blah. Now, for me, I think I'll put it in WhatsApp. What has really annoyed me is signing Saeed Benrahma when money is not the issue is a statement of intent. And people can turn around and say, you don't want Andros, you don't want Eze, you don't want Wilf all in the same side. I do. I wouldn't mind seeing that. If we're going to be intent on playing Wilf as a striker and having Wilf up top, then Eze can play off him and then Benrahma can go on one ring and Andros on the other. You can split it around wherever you want. They don't all have to play, all right? Townsend can go on the bench. Eze can go on the bench. So, for me, that's the only issue I've had. The only other disappointing thing for me, and I know it's a squad game and you've got to keep a squad, is I feel there's been an opportunity for us to shift some players. And I caveat by saying, you can only sell if there's a buyer. We've seen it now. We've mentioned it several times on the pod. I won't go into it again, but Max Meyer is not going to play for us this season, right? If he's not going to come on in the games we've had so far, then there's no point in being at a club. So that's 100 odd grand a week churning a hole in our pocket. Find a way to shift him. It just makes sense. The centre midfield situation, there are countless numbers of them. I am sure one of them could have gone and it wouldn't be terrible for us. As it currently stands, yet we need them because obviously Cechu's playing at centre back, so you probably need the extra one in there, but that concerns me. Another one which might be a bit controversial, it's just Martin Kelly. He's obviously now not a centre-back because he's had a centre midfielder who admittedly does play for his international country as captain at centre-back occasionally, playing ahead of him. And they're offering a short-term contract by looks of things to Nathaniel Klein. So where does Martin Kelly fit into this? Is he, again, yes, we need squad players, but this surely would have been the time when the squad player comes in? Or are we saying we need another injury? So that's Cahill, Tompkins, Dan, and another before you come in. All in all, it has been a good window. We've lowered our age profile. We've got in the positions we probably need more than anything else. I still think there's space for one more, Benrahma, or a lad from QPR. Is it Bright Samuels, whatever his name is? I'll say Bright Samuels, whatever. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise not too bad. I'll give it a B+.
Yeah. Mark, what are your thoughts? Anything different from what's already been said?
Not a great deal. I would say that the window is a pass. It's certainly a lot brighter than the last sort of 19 windows we've had. In that we've got a bit of youth in. They look good. I think the window can sort of be gauged as well on what hasn't happened, i.e. Wilf staying. Now that if he goes, I don't see him going domestically to another club. The old argument that, I don't see any Premier League club coming in for the money that he is worth to us that they're willing to spend. Certainly not with his form tailing off at the end of last season, 70, 80, 100 million, forget about all that. You'd probably be hard-pressed to get 40, someone from maybe like an Everton or, 45, drip-fed over 10 years or something stupid. So that kind of counts as action in the window, even though it means he doesn't go anywhere. We've probably got some dead wood to move on. Maya, obviously not going to happen. If it was, would have happened by now. So get him off the wages. Kelly, as Dale said, good to have squad and a bit of depth. He's probably not going to mean much more to us than that. Be interesting to see how the Klein thing pans out. Obviously a quality player. And then, even a couple of guys, J-Mac, as much as I love him, just turned 33. So that's, obviously in football, the wrong side of 30. So definitely hang on to him for the rest of this season, but possibly looking at moving on. I'd probably go for the Dale, probably kind of around a B+. It's a pass. It's good. It'd be a great window if we could just get the Benrahma, a good attacking midfielder or striker, on a permanent. So we'll see. But not climbing into my beer about the business we've done thus far.
I'd agree with all that. I'm very pleased with the window, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the cherry on top would have been, another attacking option. I know, obviously, we wanted Brewster, but I'm glad we didn't do the deal that Sheffield United did. I mean, 25-odd million with a buyback clause and a sell-on fee as well. I mean, Liverpool have literally hedged their bets there. They're like, if he's good, we'll basically spend 17 million on him. They're basically signing a striker that's proved at a proven Premier League level for 17 million. Brilliant business by Liverpool. I'm glad we didn't do it. Batshuayi, I think he's come in with an option to buy. So if he does well, we sign him. And you said there, Eze Ferguson come in, we needed a right back, we needed an attacking midfielder. We got both of them, they're both young. I would love to see maybe like a younger centre back come in. Obviously, we've got lots of centre backs, but they're all injury prone and they're all older. So I'd love to have a younger centre back to come in and learn from the likes of Cahill and Dan and be there with them for a season. And obviously, that box to box Jimmy Mack, like a younger version of Jimmy Mack, would have been good too. But I know we're thinking with Flynn Downs at Ipswich, I believe he got injured. So probably looking at January for that. Wilfton go. So I don't think we can complain at all. I think some Palace fans are just, you know, they can never be happy and they will always want more. They always want more. My main issue is, unfortunately, the person that's managing them. Like, there is no way, I don't think if...
Cheer up, Rob. It's all right.
No, it's not.
We're six points out of 12. We've got a half-decent squad. We'll do all right, mate.
We have a half-decent squad, but are you confident, having seen what happened, let's talk about the Christmas period last year of him using that squad, when he used the same 11 players who were out on their feet for four games in like 10 days. He won't change it. The only reason Eze's playing at the moment is Schlupp's injured. That is it. One I would say, like Martin Kenny was a controversial one. One I would say that we could probably look at if it happened, I wouldn't have turned down, say, 10 million for Luka.
No, that's fair. Yeah. I wouldn't have turned that down either.
Right. If someone come in and said Luka worth 10 million, then we've got players that could come in there. And the other thing I would say is, yes, we didn't get all this business done now, and obviously January is normally an awful time, but we've still got the money that we didn't spend on that striker. Four more months of COVID, Cubs are still losing tons of money because there's no people in the stands, all that type of stuff. The January market is going to be as deflated as this one. So potentially there's going to be bargains and people might be even more desperate to get rid of a couple of players in January. So there might be some stuff to go around, a decent place to go around in January. I don't know. But I'm happy with the business. We just need to use the players in the right positions. Personally, I mean, I don't think Eze wants to play out wide left. If you see these, anyone seen the under-21s this morning? The assist he got?
Played as an attacking wide forward. Essentially, they played two tens behind Eddie and Nketiah.
Mm. Should clarify, that was in a 3-3 draw with Andorra.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Because I see someone else say that on Facebook. He played his right position, which I think we didn't spend 20 million on him. Could we look at a guy who played as a 10 all season and then go, do you know what? We'll spend 20 million and play him out of position. That's good. All right, if we sign Lionel Messi, are we going to play him left back? But okay. I get why.
Be sure. He'd sit on the bench.
I get why Roy has his system. We know it works. He's gone over this 1,000 times, right? But we just have to sometimes look at, and I'm not a Roy out guy, but what I do want to see from Roy is just a little bit more. I saw the Newcastle lineup at the weekend, and forgive me, I can't tell you who the players were, but they played a 4-2-3-1. And I looked at it, and I just thought to myself, that would actually really suit Roy. He gets his two holding midfielders in there. He can get Wilf, Eze, and Townsend, Schlupp, IU, whoever, and then the striker. And I don't think that would take too much away from us because when it's defensive, the two wide of your three come back in anyway. So it becomes a 4-2-1-1, which is basically what we set, so 4-4-1-1, which is basically how we set up anyway, right? So, I don't know, it just to me, there was a little bit there to be desired. I'm sure it will come. And I probably say we have to judge at Christmas when we get there and see when hopefully a majority of our squad's fit.
Oh, hail Lord Dale. Dale has just nailed my concerns about it all. Like, I don't think Roy has had much of a say in his signings because he's gone after this year. This is last year. They won't extend his contract. And it's going to, we're looking with an eye on the future. So Roy's going to just shoehorn people into his system. That's what he's going to do. So he's been given Eze because we need a younger attacking option. We've been working on him for a while with a view to the future. And he's going to shoehorn him in there. And as soon as Schlupp's back and fit, Schlupp plays. Guarantee it. But if you put Eze as a 10 to roam around in that Kai Havertz role, who knows what he could do?
Schlupp's his preference as his first choice substitute. That's Schlupp's position. His first choice sub comes on the hour.
That's only because that's only when he's three defensive midfielders. Now it's different. I guarantee you Schlupp will show back into that team. So my only concern for the transfer window is using the players in the right position. I'm very happy with the business we've done. I'm very happy with the players we're linked with, and I'm very happy because I think this will continue over the next at least one or two windows. So I've got no concerns there. So with that being said, from our predictions way back when, obviously looking one of them looking spot on, to be honest with you guys, with Jordan Ayew being the donkey. Have expectations for the season changed, Mark? Now, 6 points, those two early wins, 6 points, half-decent transfer window, a squad developing. Have your expectations changed this season, or are you still very firmly in the camp where you were when we started potting?
Well, before I get too deep into that, one of my expectations has been absolutely dashed with news that Jaroslaw Žák has gone back out on loan to Fortuna somebody somewhere in the world. So can only hope and pray he toddles off, does some sort of Serloff-esque type marauding throughout the season and comes back an absolute champion, or we sell him for a mozza and make some money. But I selfishly just want to see him go around a bit. He's just our unknown quadrant that's on the books. But anyway, good luck to him. With expectations for the season, haven't really changed much. I'm still kind of pegging mid-table, bottom of top half. I think my season prediction was ninth, I think, on goal difference, or possibly even eighth. Ned can correct me on that.
I can't.
And yeah, you know, we'll see. It's been a funny old sort of start, really. I'm not naive enough to think that my silly predictions here on a dinky podcast on the other side of the world could possibly affect players' form. But since I gave Aya the death knell, he's been an absolute bag of shit. And since Wardy got my little Aussie Battler award, he's here, there, he's everywhere. He's going past Andros and getting right amongst it. So, my expectations haven't really changed, mate, as yet.
What about you, Ned?
Well, firstly, I'm just going to say, you know what, Rob? You've convinced me. Roy out, Werner in.
I'm available.
Yeah. Just to clarify, it's not a slight on Roy. That's just, I mean, when you've got a tactical and sort of motivational genius like Mark Werner available, he needs to be employed. I'll be honest, I don't remember where I said we were going to finish. That pod was at least 2 weeks ago, so I've clearly forgotten completely. My expectations haven't really changed all that much since then, though, so I'm going to assume that whatever I said then, I stand by. Look, as I said, decent start. I think after four games, you know, it's probably a little bit early to readjust thinking just yet. Positive start. Long may it continue.
Leader.
So I said that we'd finish 13th, we're currently 12th. Can't see us changing much from there. I think that's it. I think let's just be honest, we are Crystal Palace. Our status quo from now on should not be fighting relegation. It should be sitting comfortably between 8th and 14th. Done. And if we're there, I don't give a shit.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree. I don't think my six expectations might have gone up maybe a place. So I've gone from 12th to 11th or maybe even 10th. We'll flirt with a top 10 with the squad we've got, I think. As much as I hate it, as much as I don't, I'll be bored of it. And Ned's going to love this. But I think we'll get us the points to play us around there. But it's just going to be turgid, like turgid's crap. So
Roy out. He's going to get us the points that we need to get to where we want to be.
But no, I still want to. I think other people. I think a lot of other managers can do it as well. If people don't believe that, then they're fucking idiots. But I think other managers can do it in a more exciting way. But that will. I think 10, 11, 10.
Let's have a quick look at the table, right? Let's. I know 4 games in, can't read anything into it. We sit 12th. Let's be realistic, right? Those teams above us who will probably finish below us. Villa, or we should finish above. Villa, Newcastle, West Ham, Southampton, right? Then below us, we have Man United, Man City, Wolves, who will probably jump us.
Man City won't jump us. They're rubbish.
So look, that being said, we are looking at somewhere between 8th and 15th, which again, if we do that and we're not in a relegation dogfight, we don't look anywhere near as bad as Fulham, Sheffield United, Burnley or West Brom. Then they're the four who will probably stay there. Brighton are below us at the moment. Then I think, you know, West Ham, once David Moyes is back on the touchline, they'll be rubbish again. for me, the only one there that I look at and go, I have no idea about, is Leeds.
I've played rugby with a Leeds fan. My God, he worships. Bielsa could do whatever he wants.
Of Bielsa, there's a cult. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about Bielsa and what he does and what he brings to a team and blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, what would we be like with Bielsa?
Oh, please.
I just thought to myself, it'd be interesting, isn't it? Because I can't imagine a Wilf galloping up and down the wing like someone like Jack Harrison does, for example. But then I think we could see some more attacking intent. But then would we be, at least have also conceded a bunch of goals? So they conceded 8 goals already. Now, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? And it does all that, what leads to tempering his expectations. Whereas I think Leeds fans are going to have a great season because they're going to be really excited because they're back. But do you know what? It could easily go to shit for them.
Yeah, it could do. Of course it could do. But I mean,
that won't happen with Roy.
I think Bielsa would play people in the right positions, for one. And look, what I would say with Leeds is they've come up, they haven't done much. They've got a couple of new defenders. I mean, Ben White was their main defender. He's gone back to Brighton. So they've come up, but I know they've signed a keeper. I'm not sure they've got a 3-year-old in goal, haven't they? That 3-year-old.
He's a very good 3-year-old, though.
Yeah, isn't he? Just
very good 3-year-old.
Once my 3-year-old was good, I'd be riding him to the banks. So they've come up and they're just getting used to the Premiership. I think they'll be all right. I don't think they'll concede that many goals all the time. It's just going to be what they like when they play a team like us. They have no interest in attacking whatsoever. Will they be able to break us down? So that'll be the one to check out. But yeah, I think we're all in agreement that, yeah, anywhere between 8th to 14th is probably where we'll sit. And I think Marky gave he said 8th. And Ned, to your thing with Werner available, as long as he doesn't get arrested after his sojourn he's about to do after the end of this podcast, then he should still be around. So
this is how he's raising funds for transfers.
Exactly. And just don't, we always tell you, Mark, don't wear the black and white hooped top. It makes it too obvious what you're doing. All right?
Too hot up here for that anyway, mate. But look, I'm just carrying on with the family business that my ancestors did a couple of hundred years ago, which is exactly how I ended up here.
Well, just don't paint yourself black and white, you idiot. Just paint yourself a different colour. Just not black and white. Just looking at the next few games, we've got Brighton, Fulham, Wolves, Leeds, Burnley, Newcastle and West Brom. So that's our next 7. 7 games, they're the teams. What do you think is a realistic point? So what should we be looking at to get out of them? Considering how we've started and the players we've got now, there, what do you think out of those 7 games there would be? And obviously Ned's going to say 21. I know he is. But what do you reckon now, Dale, out of those 7? So Brighton home, Fulham away, Wolves away, Leeds at home, Burnley away, Newcastle home, West Brom away.
7 games. Look, let's 1.5 points a game. I'll be happy with that. So 10 points. 10, 11 points, I'll take it. And some people might say, that's not great. We should be beating some of these teams. Yeah, we should. Do you know what? I look at that and go, we should beat Brighton, we should beat Fulham, we should beat Burnley, we should beat West Brom, we should beat Newcastle, we should beat Leeds. But that isn't the way the world works, unfortunately. They're all sitting there going, we should beat Palace. So they're going to be tough, tough fixtures because I think that's where our season gets defined. If we walk out of those 7 and we've got anywhere between 17 and 20 points on the board, I'm happy. Anything above that, superb. Anything above 20, and it's brilliant. Anything below 16, and you might start seeing a little bit of squeaky bum.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you up?
Yeah, I just looked at the next five, mate, but expanding that out to the seven, I thought we should definitely get 10 points out the next five, but given we tack on Newcastle and West Brom, I think probably a minimum of, not a minimum, but 13 points, I think, would be a status quo. Anything north of that is getting into good. Anything less than 13. Given the opposition, we're not going to strut around and get, you know, I expect 13 from every 21 points on offer. No. But given the form of those teams we're playing, I'd expect sort of 13, 16. Obviously accepting anything beyond that. I do think, just you mentioned there, you know, home, away and whatever. Doesn't really count, obviously, with the COVID thing. It's just, it's almost like all neutral venues. And I think a lot of that is playing into the narrative of these wacky results we're getting and about some players either playing a whole lot better with no crowds or some players not lifting that normally would with the no crowd there. So I think that's going to extrapolate a lot throughout the season, and we're going to see some odd results and some different form from players we may not have expected, and it's going to be a curly one, I think.
What are you, Ned?
I'm just going to pick up a couple of things that both Dale and Mark said. So firstly, Mark, are you suggesting that Villa putting seven past Liverpool was a wacky result? I would have thought that'd be about expected, to be honest.
Gone all right lately, Liverpool, but not the other day.
Yeah, and the other one, I liked Dale's, anything north of 20 points would be great. Yeah, that would mean seven wins out of seven. So that would be fantastic.
No, I meant 20 points total. You know that.
What, 20 points total out of seven games? So seven wins.
No. I mean, as in add on to our 16 we've already got.
Okay, right. There we go. Now I'm with you. I was going to say, I mean, I also would be very happy with more than 20 points from our next seven games. I think that would be a fantastic result. I think if you're looking at those teams, if we could get sort of more than 12 would be good. Less than 12, I think, as Dale said, is probably we're starting to get a little bit nervy. I think Rob might have more friends in his boy out camp that he's hosting. But yes, I mean, the more results we can get, I kind of want us to win seven games, 1-0, playing with 10% possession in each game, playing the most dour football, because I know it will eat Rob up inside to have to be happy about the fact that we're winning, but also just completely and utterly miserable about the style. That's my hope. Seven games, seven 1-0 wins, 70% possession total, if you add them all up.
With regards to the Royale Club, anyone, it's an open invitation to anyone to join at any time. It's not an exclusive club there, so please join me. If we end up all right after this run of games around about the 20-point mark, I reckon that should be about par for who we're playing. I mean, there's some toughies in there. I mean, Wolves away is going to be tough. Leeds would be a bit of fun as well. And Burnley's always a rubbish place to go. And I understand, like, home and away, haven't got the fans there. But you also, I think, teams travel is very different. The way teams prepare for away games now is very different as well. So I think you've got to take that into account when you're playing home and away, especially if you're going on a trip like two. So Newcastle coming to us is going to be a shocker, I think. And us going to Burnley might be tough. So 20 points, anywhere around 20 points after those few games, that'll be next four, it's 14 points. That's pretty good. I reckon that'll put us up in a roundabout. We'd definitely be in the top 10 then as we come into that busy Christmas period. If you look a bit further on, then we've got Spurs, West Ham, Liverpool, Villa, Leicester, Sheffield United, Arsenal, City to kind of round out towards just before Christmas. So, you know, if we get momentum and a bit ahead of steam and a bit of form in and around about the 20-20 point mark, then we can really push on and have ourselves safe by, you know, February time again. And then we can look at what we want to do. If Roy can be bothered to motivate the team or not after that. And if we do get, mate, if we get 7-1 nil wins, you won't hear me complaining.
We will. That's a flat out lie, Rob. That is a flat out lie.
I'll say it right now, just like I will be at the meet that we're
going to say, you won't be complaining whilst you're in Adelaide, right?
Mate, oh, if we're in Adelaide, I'll be in Adelaide. Wherever it's happening, I'm there. I look forward to being there and then shoving you all up, yeah, to stuff you all. I'll be there. First,
you show me, and I'm putting it out there on the podcast. You show me your plane ticket, and I'll get mine.
Mate, as soon as we come up with a date and a venue, it will be booked.
Carrie and Akia might have to come for me to get it over the line, but you show us your ticket.
Mate, I've just come back from on the journey back from Coffs Harbour with the wife and kids on Tuesday. I said, oh, we're looking at going somewhere. She was like, yeah, that'll be cool. Where are you looking at going? I said, Byron or South Australia been spoken about. She said, that'll be nice. So I've already got my pass. So I'm good to go.
Oh, that's very different to a pass, Rob. Saying that'll be nice. That was not a, that'll be nice, you can go. That'll be nice for those that are allowed to attend.
Yeah, and I'll be there. You won't be, Ned. You won't be out of Victoria. So it'll be, where is Ned? Hashtag where is Ned.
I still rate my chances of getting there higher than you.
Nah. Shove it. Stick up your arse, you bastards. Stick it right up your arse. All right, well, this is
me, Sacco. I'm ready for this.
All right. Yeah. Oh. As Dale rightly said, we're going to talk about Mamadou Sakho, and I believe I'm not sure if people in this pub are in agreement about him or have slightly different views, so we're about to find out. So I'm going to hand over to Ned and Dale first on their views on someone that I put in my all-time Palace Premier League team, and I stand by it. So I believe you might have slightly different views.
He's not good enough. His career has gone downhill from the moment he signed for us. He's missed more games than he's played. I know there's the stats that say errors leading to goals. Before Saturday, only said 3. And after Saturday, still only says 3. So that tells you everything you need to know about that stat.
It's okay, Dale. I've got some stats for you. Don't stress. I mean, you have your rant and I'll spit them out afterwards.
Look. At the time we signed him, I remember saying that was not a signing the manager wants. That's a signing Parrish made to appease the fans after the loan spell. Simple as. He had a good spell of us on loan. He was desperate to prove a point to Klopp. If you want to know what that guy is about, if you want to know what he's about, go back to that Liverpool game. Palace 4, wherever it was, Liverpool 1, whenever we beat him at Anfield. And Benteke and him are doing that handshake on the sideline. I tell you what, that says a lot about his character, that he's prepared to do that at Anfield in front of the people who own him. That's, to me, that's pretty crap, right? As a person, that's pretty shit. And then since he's played for us, yeah, he's been good. Yeah, he's made some good last-ditch tackles. Yeah, he's done this. Oh, he's the warrior. Well, I tell you what, mate, he's a liability. He's gone downhill. Another one. We cannot give him away. Who is going to sign him? Youngest ever French captain, PSG captain, whatever, was in the French national team. Yeah, that's all great 10 years ago. He is now a liability to the Premier League. And I've read a lot of stuff in the last couple of days about how fans not being there has affected most, more so defenders, because they're worried. They don't have to make, they can make more mistakes now. They don't switch on because there's no one on their back. It doesn't matter, right? I can guarantee you this. Gary Cahill does not make those mistakes. A truly switched on professional does not make those mistakes. Plus, he's playing alongside a centre mid, a part-time centre back. Who's been better out of two of them?
Giate.
Hands down.
Shit.
The guy is not fit for purpose for us at the moment. Remember, that needs him to be dropped to come back in so he can reevaluate. Whether it's we need to sell him, whether it's just rip up his contract, I don't know. Something needs to happen because he is a concern. He scares the crap out of people. And everyone wants to have a go at Wayne Hennessy saying, oh, the defence don't trust him, the defence don't trust him. I'll tell you what, the midfield cannot be trusting Mamadou Sakho. They cannot be. He doesn't put his foot through the ball, back heels in his own box, floundering under headers, and that's just Saturday. Ned.
I think in the interest of fairness in this debate, I think it'd be great to hear from Rob next. And then I'll tear his argument to shreds, because otherwise I'm going to go and then he's going to speak and I'm going to tear his argument to shreds afterwards. So in the interest of saving time, go for your life, Rob.
All right. Well, firstly, who hates who more? Dale with Mamasako or me with Roy? Because I think it's going to be bloody close.
I think it's going to be fair.
A close argument. One thing I won't argue with is that he's gone downhill. I won't argue that at all. You see the mistakes were on Saturday. Shouldn't have happened. Has he been valued for money? Absolutely not. I mean, he's been injured more. He's not. But he's a centre back that we don't have. We've never had before. If you look at, let's go, let's take it back to the Damien Delaney's of the world. Like, anytime the ball was anywhere near anything, they just hump it out. They just hump it out. Sometimes that's what you've got to do. That's what you've got to do. I agree.
Oh, God.
Sometimes there are times where he hasn't humped it out and he's taken a second and he's played a pass and has sprung an attack. And it happens more often than not. He has it in him, the back heel. Does it give me heart palpitations? Absolutely he does. But, you know what? So you made a very good comparison to Hennessy. When Guaita makes a mistake, people give him it's Guaita, he's got credit in the bank. Hennessy makes a mistake, and I'm as good as everyone. We're into him, and he's not as good as Hennessy. Cahill makes a mistake. It's Gary Cahill. It's okay. Sakho makes a mistake. It's a popular opinion to jump on it, so they jump on it. Another thing I say as well is that if you defend for 85 minutes like we did on Saturday with no attacking intent, where are the mistakes more likely to come from, the strikers or the centre backs? And if you tell me that Kouyaté was brilliant on Saturday, then I'll tell you you're lying, because he wasn't. He was making mistakes too. Who made the mistake at Old Trafford that missed the air kick that when Donny van der Beek scored? Who was that?
Listen. Kouyaté made the air kick, and who ushered the ball across the back at the front of them? I'll tell you who. Mamadou Sakho. He did. He's there in his own 6-yard box. The ball runs across him and lets it go.
My argument would be, if he had stopped it and then Rashford, and it comes straight and Rashford had scored, you'd be like, what's he doing? So he's damned if he does, he's damned if he don't. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you that his performances have gone downhill. I'm saying he is a Rolls Royce of a centre-back, in that he doesn't dive into, like, I think he was unlucky to be centre-back against Bournemouth last season because he won the ball, clearly, and then...
But it was his bad touch... But set to put him in that situation.
He wouldn't have won the ball. Hoofed
it. He has a touch like a fucking giraffe. He should have just hoofed it.
Not all the time. So, let's agree to disagree. I still believe he's up there with the best ever had. I mean, up with Eric Young. I'd have him in there every day of the week. But you know, I appreciate, like, apart from Ned, I appreciate everyone else's opinion.
You haven't even heard my opinion yet.
Well, I'm not going to appreciate it. I certainly don't appreciate your opinion on Roy, that's for certain.
Mark's opinion doesn't count, because Mark just likes him because of his hair. And his hair is shit.
Oh, wow, Mark, respond to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to that seat here, Jesus.
I was just going to say, I agree with Rob. He's, his form is definitely waning, and there's no doubt he's a Ferrari, but someone's put a bit of diesel in the tank and he's coughing and spluttering and carrying on. So I don't know, yeah. I mean, his hair's still fucking pretty good, if I'm honest. But that jump he had for the header, look, I've never played, kicked a football professionally in anger in my life, but man, he fucked that header up royally. His feet were already on the ground, I think, before the ball was even above him. So... I don't know how we got that wrong. And as has been said on other pods, you know, his stats don't belie the slating he's getting. And for whatever reason, his mistakes just stand out a lot more than others. They just do. I think he's one of the one of the best we've got to play it out from the back once he gets a hold of the ball. But yeah, he's been a bit of a tit lately.
I mean, I agree with you there. I think his mistakes stand out for because he tries to do too much at times, and it's, you know, when he shouldn't. Whereas if a Gary Cahill makes a mistake, then it's a slip or he's made the wrong pass, whatever, when normally he just humps the ball out. So I think you've got to take the rough move.
Can I ask you, mate, when Gary Cahill slips, he makes a mistake. When was the last time, and I'm not just talking at Palace, I'm talking about in his entire footballing career, when was the last time that Gary Cahill made three mistakes costing his team gold in a half?
I have no idea. I've not watched Gary Cahill's career.
I'll give you a clue. Neither have I, but I'm pretty confident it's never. I'll be honest, I can't remember the last time any Palace player at any time ever made three, cost us three goals individually in a half of football. Can you, if you can point out one, I will happily apologise and I will join. I will grab your Roy out drum and I will beat it. If you can find me that example, you can't. Exactly.
I'm not finished. You poor day. He was shit on Saturday. I'm not saying he wasn't.
Okay. So I mean, we just had something. I will caveat by saying I think Rob, you do make a point that he does cop a little bit more than perhaps is warranted sometimes. However, when people sit there and talk about the stats that, you know, popped up, it's, you know, there's a few other ones that they sort of tend to ignore. In the air, he is by far our worst defender, by far. Like, in terms of aerial duels won since in the last 3 years at Palace, he's won less than 50%. Everyone else is operating in the mid to high 60s. So he's absolutely terrible in the air. He doesn't give away as many fouls, but he gives away more penalties, which gives you an idea about where he's making fouls, and just his decision making at times is quite interesting. And the other one that I looked at is in terms of you say he's good going forward, so at least creates more chances for us. With Mamadou Sakho in the team last year, we were a goal worse off than when he wasn't in the team. And for the last 3 years at Palace, we have been worse off when he is in the team than when he's not. According to...
I didn't say he makes more chances, but he will spring attacks more of it. He will look for a pass.
I'm talking about in terms of goals scored okay, against us when he's not on the pitch versus when he is on the pitch. We average more goals scored against us when he is on the pitch. We average less of a sort of net score when he is on the pitch than when he's not. Over the last 3 years, that's the case. He is by far, of our main five defenders, his average in that is by far the worst. So I think you sort of have to look and go, yes, he passes the ball forward nicely. Yes, he can do some good things. But our entire system is built around discipline and is built around being able to sort of sit there and absorb pressure. And Sakho can do that for 88 minutes out of 90. But the 2 minutes that he doesn't do that, like, is bad. Like, when Sakho stuffs up, he stuffs up. And he stuffs up.
Okay, I understand. No, stats can show you for anything, and I understand you've done some good research there, fair enough. But then I will cast my mind back to one just off the top of my head. Spurs away last year when we lost 4-0, and it was 4-0 at half time. He hadn't played in donkeys, wasn't fit, wasn't ready, and was found out by that, as you would do. So that goes, and then the next week he wasn't playing again, and we might draw 0-0. So you put those two games in context. We lose 4-0 to Spurs with a very undercooked Sakho there, and that's four goals against that. When we have
4-0 to Chelsea with a fit Sakho, and
that's what I was coming to. And I'm I denied that it wasn't 95% his fault Saturday. Not once have I denied that. I mean, he made three mistakes. He gave away a penalty, missed time to jump for the Zuma header, and you know the shocking air kick when he went to clear the ball. I'm throwing them all on him because that was definitely him. But he got thrown in against United. He was absolutely fantastic. He hadn't played for Doncaster.
Which is what I'm agreeing with you, Rob. In terms of he's more than capable of doing fantastic stuff. But when he stuffs up, it costs a goal. When most other defenders stuff up, it's not usually anywhere near as bad as when he does it. I still have nightmares about that, about Roy's first win at Chelsea, 2-1 up in the 93rd minute at Stamford Bridge, having not won a game in 7 games. Worst ever start to the Premier League. And Mamadou Sakho sitting there trying to do, in the 93rd minute, trying to do back heels across the 6-yard box. And you're sitting there going, what is going through your brain at that point? And he just has
moments. On that exact game then, and it was at home, we won 1-0, and the only reason we scored the goal is Sakho wins a tackle.
Rob, I'm not debating his abilities when he's playing. I'm not debating his abilities in that position. I'm suggesting that the mistakes that he makes are catastrophic mistakes for the team. Like it's like you sit there and you go, it's the old England goalkeeper problem. You used to have all these fantastic English goalkeepers who would pull off save after save after save, and then you would get to that one moment where the ball would just be rolling straight to them and it would go through their legs. That's Mamadou Sakho. Yeah, he will be absolutely brilliant for 89 minutes, but you know that every single game he is going to do something, just one thing, or on Saturday, 3 things, just one thing every week that you sit there and you go, oh, Jesus, what the fuck is going through his brain? And you can't, and in a team where our entire system, which I know that you're going to agree with this bit because you hate it, our entire system is built around defensive discipline and being able to maintain control, composure, and just concentration, he does not have the ability to maintain that concentration for 90 minutes.
Yes, I would. You've got the stats, and I can't argue with stats. I've got my opinions across there now. Maybe it's just that, and this is a complete generalization, I might be wrong, and I apologize if I am, but maybe we're just used to your Gary Cahill style defenders, Damien Delaney, Scott Downs, a bit more of a ball playing centre back, Peter Ramage. All these guys are stoppers.
Yeah? We are not used to Gary Cahill defender because he's class. We are not used to that style
of defender I'm talking about. I
have no doubt if we went and did the stats on Gary Cahill, we would see he is not just a get it out defender. He is somebody who is able to pass to his midfield. And this is because he's played in better teams, admittedly. So now he's playing for us. It may be a case of I have to get it out because there isn't an outlet for him. So, you know, that might be a bit skewed on Gary Cahill. Sakho, you ask Liverpool fans and they will tell you he's not good enough for Palace. They will tell you he wasn't good enough for them. They'll tell you he's not good enough for Palace. I will stand by. I don't think he passes the eye test for me because I don't want to be watching a centre-back and thinking, oh, shit, what's he going to do now if it's not clear the ball?
Dale, I've got that stat just for you. Last season, Gary Cahill pass completion rate, 86.7%. Mamadou Sakho pass completion rate was 87.4%. So reasonably, Sakho marginally better, but reasonably.
You can't look at that set because that might have been, and again, that might have been Sakho 88 or 90% of his passes were to Gary Cahill or vice versa.
Well, what would you like?
Judging by the way we play, I'd say there was certainly passes for each other.
But I don't know how many of those passes are forward-thinking passes, or how many just like passing back to Guaita, or passing like 2 yards to, you know, there's a lot to that. So,
okay, I've got that stat too.
Okay, that's cool.
So progressive passes last year. So that's classified as a pass that moves towards the opponent's goal at least 10 yards. From its furthest point. So progressive passes last year, Gary Cahill played 40 and Mamadou Sakho paid 27. I'll just get that per 90 for you. It's a very good website, this one. It's great. So you're looking at... all right, so Sacco's playing an average of about one more per game than Cahill.
It's not conclusive, is it? It doesn't say Sacco's miles better than doing it than Cahill.
Oh, look, just my opinion is what I think. I just think there's a lot of other shit that can go on. Like, you know, Sacco's mistake leads to goal, and I think that's been disproven by multiple people. Maybe Sacco's making maybe the other mistakes aren't being punished when Sacco's playing because Sacco mops up afterwards. Who knows? I'm not saying he does. I'm just saying there's all this other shit out there that rolls around it. I just think that when he's got very much got the Wayne Hennessy thing, but I agree with the Wayne Hennessy thing because I think it's crap. But if he makes a mistake, a lot more people jump on it than if.
So it works for Hennessy, but not for Sacco. Just by the way, Scott Dan played more progressive passes than Mamadou Sakho last year. Accuracy wasn't there, but they played more.
One accuracy wasn't there. And two, I think if you listen back, I said Scott Dan is underrated as a ball player. I think he's a very good ball player centre back. He likes to pass the ball forward. I mean, I remember there's a clip last year, I think Virgil van Dijk or Trent Alexander-Arnold plays a ping pass and someone put it out there that Scott Dan did it like 5 years earlier. Like, it was an immense pass. It's kind of like, well, no one was talking about it then because it was Scott Dan and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Everything that he does is the best thing that anyone's ever done. So, I think we just agree to disagree, but we just have to, me and Mark know that me and him are right. So that's fine. All right. Any more? I know we've gone over a little bit. There's no time for the Carl Vert game, but the answer was Carl Vert. So well done, everyone, for getting that right.
That was my guess.
For the next Palace manager and Palace's most underrated player of all time, Carl Vert, well done. Ned, do you want to make a nod to your thing about Mike Riley McGree joining Birmingham? Because you did big him up a little while ago.
Yeah, since we're discussing Carl Vert and his magnificent management of Adelaide United, his job has just gotten a fair bit tougher because two of his best young players have buggered off, which is probably good for Aussie football. We've got a couple. One's gone and joined Brentford to go and join the revolution over there. And Riley McGree, in what is arguably the world's oddest football move, has signed for one of the new MLS teams and so naturally has been loaned directly to Birmingham City in the championship, because that is the natural career progression. You go on loan from the US back to the UK and then go back to the US again afterwards once you've gained the experience to be good. I think that's about the most exciting transfer news on the men's part of football. All of our men's players seem to not go anywhere particularly exciting. On the women's side, I know Mark's always big on that as well. They've got a new coach who is David Bowie. Anyone who hasn't seen him, a guy called Tony Gustafson, he used to be the assistant to the US team and is actually just David Bowie in disguise. So, should be interesting to see what he can do. Hopefully, some good stuff there. But I think that's about the most exciting things happening on the local front, given that our league is scheduled not to start for ages now due to COVID. So, yeah.
In all seriousness, if the guys signed by Brentford, then, I mean, their scouting is pretty much second to none, so you must have something about them.
Quick add to that of the remaining Thunder that Ned didn't steal from me. Hayley Rasso, good luck to her, featuring for Everton in the FA Cup final coming up. Hopefully she can go one better than Millay and get an Aussie on the winner's podium with that. So good luck to Hayley and the Evertonian women.
Indeed. All right, guys, anything else, any more?
I'd just really like to hear Dale just have one more little go at Mamadou Sakho, if I could.
A pass shot.
I'm spent, mate.
Roy, mate. Anything for Roy, Rob?
Sick of him, mate. All right, so from the Mabaseko Roy Hodgson fan club, thank you very much for listening. We've got got a weekend off getting annoyed at Sacco and Roy's tactics, which is nice for everyone. And then we can all look forward to the big one against Brighton in a couple of weeks' time. So a bit of housekeeping. Mark, are you boys meeting up? Are you guys meeting up at the pub at the moment?
We met up for the season opener. Then, obviously, being the early game, we had a few out for Chelsea. Had three just blow-ins that I'd never seen before. Couple of English lads that came in for that. So I think we had six or seven, which is pretty good numbers for us, to be honest. I've been moving house, so yeah, a lot going on in my world at the moment. So more of that to pan out once I get settled and that sort of thing. But obviously looking forward to the national meetup, should that happen and we can get interstate travel happening here in Australia. So I'll be bang up for that, mate. I'll have a pint on the bar waiting for you when you turn up, Rob, obviously. And good. That's about it. But I'm going to have to run and quickly knock over this place before this bird gets back on the school run. So I've got to dash.
All right. Well, just make, as I said, something nice and shiny. That's all I want. Dale, thanks, mate. Go watch the debate. Ned, all good. Thank you very much as well. Enjoy lockdown and going to work. Thank you all for listening. Jimmy, sort it out. Get the national meetup sorted so I can go and get my pint from Mark. So other than that, thank you very much, guys. And up the pants.
Shoot, Ned, stop recording so I can say something. If I say something, I might regret.
Talk about the next few games. We can talk about Sacco if you want, and then that's pretty much
it. Yeah, if I want to talk about that. Maybe not use it. Please.